you are perceived by others in a particular way, and that perception of you is your brand. So you have a brand by default. It's whether you want to promote that brand and sort of make people more aware of what you do and what benefits you provide, and that will help you in progressing your career.
Welcome to the People Stack Podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk. I am a career coach for tech managers and CEO of the People Stack. My guest for this episode is Phil Burgess. He is host of the IT Career Energizer podcast. Welcome, Phil.
Yeah, hi, Jen. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, super excited to chat today, Phil. And I want to dive right in so that folks can know what it is that you do. Tell us about your podcast. What's your mission with it?
Okay, so the IT Career Energizer podcast was an idea probably about 2 years ago. I've been listening to various podcasts over maybe a six-month period, and I felt there was something that I could do and provide value to people who are thinking about coming into the industry or maybe have a couple of years' experience by trying to get people who are experienced to share their knowledge with other people. So it's really about trying to provide information to help others in their career journeys.
Got it. And particularly in IT career journeys.
Exactly, yes.
Got it. So define that a little bit for us. Define the scope of what we're talking about. What kinds of IT careers?
Okay, so to give you a bit of a flavor, a lot of the people I have on are from a development background. So they tend to be people who are regular conference speakers and maybe have a particular interest in, say, for example, agile methodologies, or maybe they're into JavaScript or Python. And I try to get people who are experts or recognized as leaders or implementers in those particular areas onto the podcast. So it's not specific to a particular role. It's quite generic, and I try to spread it around to give people a flavor of the different types of roles that are within the IT industry. So you get people without business analyst backgrounds, project managers, developers, testers, a real range of individuals on the podcast.
That's great. That's great. And that's definitely what I like to try to do too. If we have two focus on like one role, you know, like the software engineering, for example, that we forget there's other humans that are involved in the process as well, and we can absolutely learn from them as well. And that's how we're going to ultimately create the tech industry into an awesome thing and create awesome products and services, is by really kind of coming together. So I love that approach.
Yep, that's exactly it. So I think it's very much a case of trying to give people a real understanding of all the different things that can happen or the roles that are available within the IT industry, and learning from the people who've been there and done it.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, from your perspective, what led you or pulled you to want to do this? Do you have a tech background yourself, or was it something else?
I do have a tech background. So 25 years, believe it or not, I've been working in tech. But I got to a point where what I do can be quite repetitive at times. I can go from company to company as a consultant and pretty much do the same things again and again. And I wanted to do something a little bit beyond my comfort zone. So public speaking isn't necessarily one of my comfort areas, but I thought a way of getting into that and beginning would be through a podcast, which is one of the reasons I decided to go down that route.
Cool. So you're doing that 100% of your time now, or is there other stuff that you're working on too?
I still do my day-to-day consultancy. So the podcast is more of an additional activity. I tend to do weekends and evenings rather than during the day.
Mm-hmm. And your consultancy is IT consulting?
It is, yeah. It's primarily around the quality assurance side of things. So working with large corporates, typically delivering middle office, back office systems.
Very cool. So that, would you call that your day job? But that's your own business though, right?
Yeah, it is. It is really my day job. That's right. I'd like to run that down and probably focus more on the IT career development side of things, but that's something perhaps for 2019.
Got it. Yeah, we do have a new year coming. Gosh, it's November already as we're recording this podcast. It's like, how did that happen?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I'm looking here. We've just left daylight savings, and I'm sure during the podcast it's going to be dark behind me very shortly.
Oh, that's right. And you're in the UK, right?
So that's right. Yes.
Okay. Got it. It's always fun to talk with folks across the pond. And it's interesting. So do you talk with lots of folks from the US or enough folks from the US that you can get a sense of what's going on in the UK in terms of tech versus what's going on in the US?
Yeah, I get a fair split. So the guests I've had on the podcast, I get quite a lot of people from the US, a smattering of people in the UK, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, Spain, Italy, Germany. So yeah, I've really got a bit of an international flavor to the podcast.
That's very cool. I wanted to ask you, are there different international flavors that you pick up, you know, US versus UK versus Australia or other different parts of the world?
They tend to be more cultural, I think, rather than the actual the technology side of things. So it's the way people think about what they do and how they do it, as opposed to the actual underlying technology and how they use it, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. So what are some of the cultural differences, though, that might have an impact on tech?
That's a tricky question to answer. I'm trying to think back. So I've spent quite a bit of time working with the Italians, for example, and their sort of working culture is very different to the way, for example, the guys in the UK work. And there's certainly more passion in the way they do things. So that comes out more in the working environment and then I think in the way that things potentially are developed and features, for example, are created. It can be quite a different process, but arriving at a similar result, if you see what I mean.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was actually thinking about a conversation that I had at a conference with some international folks. I believe it was somebody from Germany. And we got into talking about the work to live culture versus live to work culture. Yep. Do you pick up on that as well in terms of cultural differences?
There's certainly that. Some of the Europeans are far more work to live. It's more family oriented the way they do things, and other areas it's very, very work focused. So it, there are differences, yeah, but sometimes that varies just between different individuals rather than the actual cultures.
For sure. Yeah. And thank you for calling me out on that. We don't want to put people into buckets and say that everybody from Italy or everyone from the UK or everyone from Germany is the same. It is interesting, though, to look at the different, you know, different cultural trends and the, you know, the overall trends. But that's really a great reminder. And so I'm curious, just more generally, when you think about all of the folks who you've talked with for your podcast, and you've done, how many episodes is it so far? It's almost 100?
Well, yeah, so there are, I think the 82nd one goes live on this coming Monday. I've actually recorded 101, so we're just over the 100 mark now.
Congratulations. That's a big benchmark. That's a lot to do.
It is, that's right. But there's also a change coming up as well. So I've been doing one a week in terms of releasing, but we're actually moving to three interviews every week now. So we're going to be doing Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays going forward as of this Monday.
Wow, that's exciting. That's more of everything.
Exactly. So yeah, quite a challenge. Fortunately, I've passed over some of the more admin-y aspects of doing the podcast to somebody else, which actually frees up my time, and yep, therefore is one of the reasons we can produce more episodes.
Yeah, I found that too, that if you can just focus on, okay, I show up for the interview, I do the interview, and then delegate out all of the rest of all of the stuff that's involved. Yeah.
I think it's important to know how to do it all, but once you have, there's no reason why you can't outsource it or give it to somebody else to do.
Yeah, absolutely agree there. But as you think about the 100 or 101 folks who you've interviewed so far for the podcast, again, big question, but what are some themes that come up?
The one that always comes through is communication. So no matter what type of communication it is, it seems to be the one that most people pick up on. So whether it's spoken, whether it's written, or even, you know, the way people interact with each other, it seems to be communication is the one theme that repeats itself most often.
Yeah, and I have absolutely found that too. I've recently started looking for themes in the People Stack podcast, and that almost every single one, it comes up, sometimes in more obvious ways, like when I'm talking with communication experts, but sometimes in less obvious ways, like when you ask people, like, what is the key to great leadership? Or, you know, how are we going to make the tech world a better place? It's, we need to learn how to communicate better.
I think the biggest tip, really, when it comes down to communication, is really understanding the person you're communicating with, and not forgetting that communication doesn't actually finish until the person's thought process has digested what information you provided them with. So they're two of the things. And of course, the other aspect of it is communication isn't just a one-way thing. It's definitely dependent on both individuals.
Yeah. And that really made me think that it doesn't stop until the other person truly understands what you said.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's something I think we often miss, because we all see the world and process the world in very different ways, process information, communication in very different ways. So don't just assume, right, that somebody's going to understand what it is that you're saying and you're expecting an answer when they may not even have understood the question. Is that kind of what you mean?
It is. And I think you picked up on a good point as well, that people understand things in different ways. So some people are more visual in the way they understand things. So a diagram or a picture or some sort of imagery will actually help them with their understanding, where others are maybe more logical in the way they think about things, and just a good explanation of something will actually resonate more with them.
Absolutely.
One of the questions I ask all my guests is their thoughts about the future of the IT industry as a whole and where technology is taking us. Mm-hmm. And the most common answer is that it's so exciting because we don't know where we are going. It's really the unknown. And that the IT industry itself, or the tech industry itself, is still very young. It's only really sort of 30, 40 years since this industry has grown into anything quite like it is now. And of course, before that, it really didn't exist. People didn't really understand what it was or what it meant. So it's something that's evolved and is still very early on in that evolution.
Yeah. And do people venture guesses as to far as what's going to happen, or like look into the crystal ball?
I think most of them are just too reluctant to do that. So when we talk about some of the hot topics like artificial intelligence and AI, virtual reality and all those sorts of things that are sort of in vogue at the moment. Big data is another one that comes up a lot. Mm. But people are just, I think, a little bit reluctant to try to predict where technology might take us. But the other side of it, of course, is that although we're making these great strides in terms of what technology is out there, it's how we use technology that's important. So you can produce the best technology in the world, but of course it can be used for good or bad purposes. It just depends on the way it's there then subsequently used.
Yeah, and so that's going to be, I think, an ongoing theme in the future as well. It's not just the tech itself, but that intersection between the tech and how people use it, and whether it's useful or not, and are people using it in good, bad ways. Yes. That the tech itself may be neutral, but it doesn't live in a vacuum.
You know? No, that's right.
So people are going to interact with it and use it for good or bad or otherwise. That's a really
good point. And of course, that conversation typically moves on to talking about security aspects, and the sort of growth area within IT is that very much that sort of around sensitivity of data and all these sorts of things start coming into the conversation. So there's a lot to consider. I think security in particular is one area that will actually grow quite significantly.
Yeah. I found that a lot of conversations often go there as well. And lots of folks who are suddenly interested now in security for obvious reasons, but also just, you know, so I want to help, right? I want to be a part of this. And yeah, so definitely lots of stuff on the horizon, and there are some big unknowns, but I like to see it as it's exciting, as long as we move forward with it in a way that we're, mindful and mindful of the people aspect of it as well. It really, the future of IT, when I think of it, it's really exciting. I love that question. I'm not sure that I would look in the crystal ball either, but, but yeah, that's cool. I love that question. So another thing that I wanted to pick your brain about, Phil, was that I noticed that on LinkedIn that you wrote an article about productivity, and that really piqued my interest because I'm a productivity geek. I love building systems for myself, and it's one of the big things that I do for my clients. And really just how do we hack? How do we become more effective, but also more efficient as well, so that we can have more time to enjoy the rest of our lives? You know, maybe like the Italians and the more of the work to live culture. So how do we find that time? So I'm curious, you know, I definitely encourage people to check that out on LinkedIn, your eight things highly productive people do differently. But I'm curious about do you have productivity hacks or rituals that you do every day that are tried and true rituals that have helped you?
There are certain things I do. And I think one of the reasons I actually wrote that particular article was I can myself be a terrible procrastinator. So it was a little bit of self-analysis in some ways to come up with, you know, look at the things that other people do and how they manage their productivity. So some of them I certainly do now. I think the very first one I talked about in particular was that try not to touch things twice. So that is a classic, something I was certainly guilty of in the past. An email would be an ultimate example of this. When you get emails in, deal with them immediately rather than sort of let them queue up in your inbox. I think that's one in particular one I've taken to heart, and I try to make sure my inbox is limited to the things I have left to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was just thinking, there's some emails that have been sitting in my inbox now that I've touched more than once. I was like, what do I do with this? But yeah, that's a great one. Do you have other ones besides don't touch things twice?
Distractions, that's another classic. It's very easy, particularly for those who work remotely, to be distracted by other things that are going on and losing focus of the task that's actually in hand. So one of the things I'm often doing these days is actually, for example, putting my mobile or cell phone onto airplane mode, just so it will not ring and it will not be popping up with messages and notifications and so forth. So I can keep focused, and then I can spend a specific amount of time catching up with those things before I move on to the next task.
That's a great easy thing to do, because turning on airplane mode on most phones is super easy. So that's a great way to turn off those distractions, because those red notifications are just, oh my gosh, they're they're red. They're right there, right in front.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. They can just draw you in.
Yeah. It's like emergency. This is on fire. When really it's just somebody sending you an email saying, thanks.
Yeah. It could well be. That's right.
Yeah.
Another one I've learned over time is it's almost a skill of actually trying to tackle the difficult problems first, because that is often one of the main reasons I find that I procrastinate. So if I put the most difficult task off, it actually impacts getting other stuff done as well. So what I try to do now is prioritize what I have to do in a day and try and tackle the most difficult things first. And then it actually leads to better productivity throughout the day.
Yeah. And that's a great point. So there's the eat the frog, right? What do you need to do? You just eat the frog. You have that frog on your to-do list, on your task list, so eat it. But that's a really great point about it affects, it's not just about getting that one thing done, although that's awesome. That feels great. It does affect your productivity for the rest of the day as well, and it gives you that momentum.
Have you read Brian Tracy's Eat That Frog?
I have not read the book. I just said it's just something that I've heard.
I noticed you picked up on that one. But yes, yeah, exactly. Eat That Frog's a very good book in explaining how to do that.
Yeah.
And particularly early on in my career, I was very much a perfectionist, because you think of QA as getting something as near to perfect as possible. But in reality, you can think about maybe the 80-20 aspect of delivering a system or whatever it might be, that really the important 80% is what you need to worry about. The last 20% can take a long time to actually deliver. And at that point, you've probably got to a point where it's exceeded its benefit. So I'm recognizing in myself as much as anything else that you don't have to be perfect at everything all the time. You mm-hmm. get to a point where it needs to be, good and more than good enough, if you see what I mean, but it doesn't have to be perfect. And be able to understand that and then manage the amount of time you spend on a particular task before you move on to another one actually improves productivity.
Yeah, that point is extremely well taken, especially for those of us who have those perfectionistic tendencies. And it could be because of our day job and because of what we do that, if you're in QA or if you're in testing or if you're in data analysis or in engineering or any of these fields, any kind of scientific field, you're trained to, okay, we got to check, we got to double check, we got to triple check before we launch this or else because there's a huge risk that you take. And while that's okay in certain times and places, and other times and places is going to get in the way of actually getting things done. And it actually reminds me, my husband had a statistics professor who used to always say, that's spurious precision. That's spurious precision. So like an example when he would use that would be like this was statistics, like using more than two decimal places. So if you said, the answer is 6.1253, that's spurious precision. Why are you wasting my time?
Yes.
So I think that applies here as well. And that sometimes we do need to let go of our perfectionist tendencies and just get it done, get it out the door.
Yep, very much so.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else to share in terms of productivity and before we move on to the next topic?
Well, there are a few, but I'll maybe just leave with one more. Multitasking, which I feel is a bit of a myth, because typically that what that means is you have to move between, you only ever can do one thing at a time. It's not realistic to talk about multitasking. And of course, if you're moving between tasks that are half complete or, partially complete, you're actually taking longer to actually complete more than one task, if you see what I mean. So you have to almost go back, remind yourself where you are, pick it up, move on, and then do the same with the next task. It's not really multitasking. It doesn't really exist as a concept.
Yeah. And there's some science to support this as well. If you just Google or go to Google Scholar and search multitasking, there's pretty good evidence out there in the research that it's actually that's not how our brain functions, that it's more about just rapid task switching. And that's, sometimes it's okay, but most of the time that's really going to kill your productivity. So I'm definitely on the multitasking as a myth board.
Yeah.
that's something that we should avoid and really just focus on one thing at a time. And what I'm thinking of as we're talking about all these productivity things, I can see some people saying, yeah, I know. I've heard this over and over again. Don't multitask, 80-20 rule, eat the frog, yeah. So I wonder, kind of playing devil's advocate a little bit, these do seem rather obvious. And we talk about them a lot, especially if you're into productivity, but even if you're not, I'm wondering, Phil, how you might respond to that kind of person who might be thinking, I get it, I've done it. And like, I don't know, in terms of underlining the importance of them, even though they seem kind of obvious.
I think a lot of it comes down to, people say, obviously, they may have tried it or done it and it hasn't necessarily worked for them. That I think, is that what you're trying to?
Could be. Like, yeah, I've tried not multitasking, it doesn't work. Or yeah, 80-20 rule, sure. Yeah, there definitely could be that kind of attitude, either a little bit or a lot. Mm-hmm.
Sure, but a lot of it I think is down to habit and establishing these sorts of things within your daily routines and making it into a habit, and then you will actually begin to see the productivity increase. It's a case of continuing a repeatability, I think. It's that. You may not see it the first time you do it because it's obviously a new thing, but I think the more you do it, the more productive you'll see yourself become.
Yeah, absolutely. It needs to be a habit. You can't just do it once and expect it to work. It needs to be over and over again. Yes. Point very, very well taken there.
Hi, everyone. We'll get back to the interview in a jiffy. But first, are you a tech manager? In other words, do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? Do you feel like you're wasting precious time going to useless meetings, dealing with administrative nonsense, and working late nights? Are you working 50 plus hours a week, but don't have the salary to show for it? It doesn't need to be that way. You can build thriving, high-performing teams who produce a measurable positive impact while earning the premium salary you deserve. Oh, and you don't have to work your butt off to get there. If this sounds like the kind of success you're striving for, then go to jenbunk.com/webinar to reserve a spot in my free masterclass. I share the 4 shifts that my tech manager clients made to achieve badass career transformation. That's jenbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the rest of the interview.
The next thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Phil, I love that we're covering so many different topics here.
It's kind of a hodgepodge
of just geeking out about different fun topics. The next topic is personal branding. And just to give people a little bit of context about why I'm asking Phil about this, is because in my Facebook group, so I do have a Facebook group for career upgrading for folks who are in the IT space, in the technical space. It's called Achieving Career Transformation as a Technical Manager. And Phil's in that group. And I had posted something about personal branding. Why is having a personal brand so important? And what you had said, Phil, in your comment, which I love, was whether or not we like it, or whether we like it or not, we should all be thinking about our personal brand. What do you want to be known for? What are your values? And how do you want to be perceived by others? And it's just, it's wonderful to have you share that because I know that not everybody feels that way. So again, playing a little bit of devil's advocate or people who may not necessarily feel that way or see that way. For example, I've talked with folks who are basically, they're in the, I don't like it. You said whether you like it or not. They're in the, I don't like it boat. And they really, maybe even part of their fundamental beliefs is that self-promotion should not be necessary and our work should really just speak for itself. I'm curious how you might respond to folks like that.
So I think it's almost taking it back a step, because in my opinion, everybody already has a brand of one level or another. So whoever you are perceived by others in a particular way, and that perception of you is your brand. So you have a brand by default. It's then how you decide, or what you decide you want others to perceive you as, and what you want to be recognized for or understood to be. So if you're happy where you are still perceived in one way and you have a brand. It's whether you want to promote that brand and sort of make people more aware of what you do and what benefits you provide, and therefore how potentially that will help you in progressing your career. So that was the thinking behind my response to your point on the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm. Right. And does this, and I think it's an excellent point. And so does this come from a place from personal experience, from you're talking with folks on your podcast, or is it kind of a combination of both?
Combination of both. So yeah. Part of it is from understanding where I've been through my career and my career journey and the changes that have occurred in my career and what I've done at particular points to move my career forward and how I've done that. So I know that it also depends on the working environment, the working culture you're at a particular time, because some people will have a good manager who will recognize you for what you do. But if you're in a large organization, you can quite easily get lost in the noise of everything else that's going on, and you can be very good at what you do, but you're not necessarily noticed or recognized because you're in that whole noise of things that are happening. And unless you begin to sort of push yourself out and make people aware of what you do and what a value you add, you may never actually get the opportunities that other people are getting.
Yeah, and that goes back to what you said at the very beginning, which I think is an extremely good, great point, which is that we all have a brand. We just may not be aware of it. So it's almost like some people may already be self-promoting, and it's almost it happens by accident, because maybe, like you said, they're in a culture that is just already just so supportive, or it's not a huge company, but it's there, versus people in other situations where you might have to work at it a little bit more. But it really is, I love that, starting with you have a brand, right? Whether you realize it or not, whether you're fully aware of it or not, we are all in thinking of defining brand as how we're perceived by others. That can't not exist, right? It's almost like, oh, right, of course, you know, because you look at other people, right? We look at other people every day and we say, oh, this is what I think of that person. This is what I think of that other person. Yeah, that happens with us too, but because, you know, we're in our worlds, right? We're like, this is me, this is my experience of it, that it just, I love looking at it that way.
Yeah, I think one thing to recognize, of course, is that how you view yourself is not necessarily how others perceive you. So that's why I think when you start talking about brand and how you want to be perceived, you need to start thinking about what you do and potentially how that's interpreted by others.
Yeah, that's a great point too. That is a really great point, that just because I think something about myself doesn't mean, or that I'm thinking something, doesn't mean that that's what other people think about me. And that can be scary, annoying. It kind of gives you that little bit, oh, okay, then maybe I do need to act a little bit differently. And then, of course, the kicker is that everybody's going to react differently. You know, you say one thing to one person and they love it. You say the same thing to somebody else and they're like, oh, that was mean, or whatever, you know, whatever the situation might be. So humans can be tricky that way.
Yeah, that is true. Yes.
So actually, speaking of humans being tricky, I just provided a segue inadvertently to the last question this is a question that I ask all of my podcast guests, and that is, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
Partly goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of communication. So it's a combination of that and being able to get your ideas across. But I also think the other aspect of it is the ability to influence others and the way they think and what they do. And I think that is a skill that you have to learn. And for me, it's very much about how you can get your ideas together in such a way that you can almost layer it and build up an argument, for example, and take them along that journey to get to the point of agreement with what you're trying to say. So that to me is the key, but it's always the challenge. It's about how do you communicate what you want and get people to understand and agree with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Are there particular I have the question, it's just not coming out right. Are there particular influence tactics or strategies that that you have found most helpful?
So a couple of things I've read around the subject, they talk about this approach of chunking, and it's a way of selling ideas in such a way that they get to agree to the easy things first, and then you take them down that path. So that's the strategy that I try to use.
Get to an easy yes, and
yep,
then
exactly
go from there.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is that would be chunking it up into smaller bits. Okay, I want to get from here to there. So what are the steps along the way? And let's get the small yeses.
Exactly. So you build that positivity through the process.
Got it. And so can you think of particular places where that might be most useful, particular contexts, like kinds of conversations?
I suppose it's a bit of a difficult one to answer. Because it depends on the situation of the conversation. So for example, if you're talking to maybe an end client, you need to, if you're talking about maybe providing a particular solution to them, you need to focus on their needs first and then build out the benefits of what you can deliver and how it meets those needs, and then build it up in that way.
Right. It's not just going to be, okay, here it is, or here's how much it is, make a decision, right?
Exactly,
we chunk it up and we make sure that it's clear this is the value, and and get on the same page. Yeah, that's a great one.
I think there's another aspect to that as well, because you've always got to think about the person at the other end of the communication. This is going back again to what we're talking about. But sure. The question in their mind is always going to be either what's in it for me or how does it benefit me? And when you present your ideas, you have to bear that in mind every time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It can't just be about me, 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 me. This is what I want. Because if you turn the table, if somebody came to you and said, okay, I want you to do this for me. Even if you're like their best friend, there's that little piece of, all right, sure, I can help. but tell me more. Right. You know, I want to break it up a little bit. I was also thinking that this particular strategy, this chunking strategy, getting to a small yes in the beginning might be very helpful, like during salary negotiations, or if somebody wanted to position him or herself for a raise or a promotion, that, you know, the way to go about it is not, hey boss, I want a promotion. You know, if you hadn't talked about anything at all before that, then, because then said boss is going to be like, well, huh? I mean, even if that boss is your like 100% advocate, it's going to be like, hang on, you know, what did you just say? But then maybe just the first step is, can we talk about my career? Or can we talk about my career trajectory? Let's talk at Friday at noon. Sure. Great. There we go. Got a yes there. and then you can move from there. I'm all about the small wins. So I love that. I love that strategy. Any other tactics or strategies with regard to influencing that you want to share?
I think you've caught me there. I'm probably done with the second answer for you. I think that's my main one, to be honest. I probably can't come up with a second one at the moment.
Okay, cool. I hear you 100% that influencing and getting your ideas across can be a huge, huge challenge. And so is there anything else that you wanted to add to that in terms of thinking about your biggest people-related challenges right now?
You have to think. So I mean, right now, it's not so much, because I'm in a consultancy role. So it tends to be that influencing aspect that is primary for me. So I don't really have the challenges that other people might have in terms of team leadership at the moment. So I probably don't have anything immediately to add to that.
Okay, understood. And look, it's we're all where we are right now, right? Yeah. And what I've actually found is that why I love talking with lots of different people on the podcast is that we can learn from one another, right? So, you know, being in a consultancy, there's certain different kinds of challenges than say leading a huge team, but there's stuff that we can learn from one another, like, you know, how to sell, how to influence. Not all leaders, not all folks in tech may kind of realize that that's something that's a skill. I love that you said that. So is that something that comes up for you, like on your podcast as well, Phil, that like the difficulties in influencing, the difficulties in connecting with other people and self-promoting, stuff like that?
It does. And I think one of the main things that comes up is that, we go back to the point we talked about know your audience, but of course, as you mentioned earlier, different people react in different ways. So you have to be able to adapt, as you progress through a conversation, for example, depending on how it's being received.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, which is such a great note, we are just about up on time for today, Phil. It's been wonderful talking with you today. Thank you for sharing what you've learned from hosting the IT Career Energizer podcast. Thank you for sharing your career journey. I know that my listeners are going to get a lot out of it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.